sky is so starless. Baby, the sky is so starless. Baby, you got me growing heartless. So heartless, girl, it's starless. Starless, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, what's up, what's up? Welcome back to the Red Light Special. This is episode number 17. I am Rob Markman, and to my right, I got Miss Kristen Coral. Chris, what up?
What's up? What's up? What's up?
We good, man. I feel like we got some explaining to do. We didn't get an episode for y'all last week.
Yeah, we had to skip a week, unfortunately, for circumstances.
Should I shout them out?
See,
you be holding me back. Some of these artists be real, like, just messing up the flow, but we're going to be nice about it. I mean, I got in trouble the last time I said something.
Yeah, you already aired one out, so.
Chris ain't
keep
like
it classy
that.
Today.
We're going to keep it real classy. But first of all, shout out to Jake and Papa. They did our intro song, Starless, which you just heard. And, of course, I want to shout out Every Time. This is R&B, man. They showcase us every week, man. Show love every week. And we got a real exciting episode this week. But first, I want to talk about something. This kid, Bryson Tiller. Trap Soul. Chris, have you heard this album yet?
Trap Soul and Chill, I definitely have.
Yo, and Bryson, man, definitely. I told you I met him like All-Star Weekend.
Mm-hmm. Way back.
February, real quiet dude, real humble dude. Super humble, and I ain't really know what he was cooking or what was going on in his head. But he had confidence, and I could tell why, because this Trap Soul album, I mean, he got joints on here. Please, if y'all haven't heard it, joints like Rambo. Rambo might be my favorite right now.
Rambo, because he's rapping on it.
Yeah.
And you know what? Somebody tweeted that they were disappointed by Trap Soul because he had so much rapping on there. But again, I think that goes back to what people expect so much from an artist. You know, he puts out songs like Don't, even Exchange that dropped right before the album officially came out.
Yep.
So they expect that sound. And I feel like people don't really let an artist kind of just like take their own lane sometimes, you know. And he had a good blend of both rapping songs and his little, you know, neo soul kind of like R&B sound on the album. So I loved it. You know, I think it's thoroughly a solid project.
Right. Nah, no doubt. And listen, we're going to get into that today with some guests because we have some very special guests. But, you know, I think we got to get over that in this day and age. Like hip hop and R&B are married together. Like our rappers want to sing and our singers want to rap. And I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. If the music come out good, like, what does it matter? Like, at the end of the day, Young Tiller spit better than a lot of these rappers who rap full time. So, because that Rambo track is serious. But definitely, if you haven't checked it out, check out Bryson Tiller, Trap Soul. And I don't doubt that he'll be a guest on the Red Light Special very soon.
Yeah, since he dropped that, we've been getting so many requests for him to be on the podcast. I think it'd be really dope to talk to him because he has like kind of that mysterious aura to him, like kind of like the Weeknd before he got to the point that he's at now. And I feel like it's such a good time for Bryson where people are really like they have all eyes on him and he's really, really just manipulating this whole situation so well. You know, I'm excited for whatever he puts out after this. Sorry Not Sorry is probably my favorite off Trap Soul though.
Yeah, me too, because he sampled Street Fighter. That was dope. Anybody who sampled Street Fighter is ill to me. Also, real quick before we go on, I want to shout out KR. Right before I came here, I heard this new song by this dude I've been following for a while, KR. So look that up. The song is called About That. Trust me. Let me know what you think. Look him up on Twitter. Who, KR?
Singer?
WHOKR. Well, he used to rap. I knew him as a rapper. And now he's singing. He got like a straight R&B joint. It's called About That. It's kind of fly. So
About That. Might have to check that out.
But listen, I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get into this week's episode. I'm super excited about this one, man. Where will I start? Let's see. This week's guests, man, they came up in the 1980s, and not only did they establish themselves with a classic R&B sound, they were key in blending R&B and hip-hop at a time when people didn't know what to make of hip-hop, when everybody said hip-hop was just a fad. Like, they married these two genres together and did it beautifully. They got their start in New York City, singing on the Staten Island Ferry and performing at the legendary Harlem World, you know, and they went on to record hit records. It just wasn't in the street. When they took it to the studio, they came out with records like Tears, Here I Go Again, Let Me Love You, Forgive Me Girl, if y'all know who I'm talking about. They had Tender Love, Love is a House. During the 2009 interview, our president, your president, my president, Barack Obama said that this group is in his iPod. probably his iPhone now. He probably got rid of the iPod.
If that's not a cosign, then.
But the president is bumping him. You understand? So, people, man, I just want y'all to give it up. We're in the presence of legends. Please welcome the Force MD, Stevie D, Khalil Lundy to the Red Light Special.
We finally here.
Oh, my God. All right, I give it up to my man, Phantom R2, for making this happen.
Yeah.
The Force MDs. What's up, brother? Introduce yourself one time.
What's up, y'all? This is Stevie D of the Force MDs.
This is Kyle. Kyle, baby.
Love that.
Okay. So we hear the Force MDs, man. And one, for just what I said in the intro, and we're going to get into that blending on being hip hop, was something that a lot of cats was trying to figure out,
man,
and couldn't quite do. And if they was doing it in the streets, they couldn't necessarily get it into the studio. And you guys perfected that. That's one thing y'all did. Another thing that y'all did that's very hard to do is y'all came out of Staten Island, New York.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
This is before, for the youngins out there, for our younger audience, this is before Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the 1980s. Like, they paved the way for Wu-Tang. Yeah. Coming out of Staten Island, Mariners Harbor, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I live on Staten Island, so I know most cats that be on the island.
Right.
Rarely leave the island.
Yes, they plants. It's a lot of plants on the island. They stay there. They don't move too much.
Coming up as young as how were y'all able to take y'all talent off of the island into the world?
Okay. Well, it was crazy because we started out as a group called the Fantastic LDs. It started as the Lundy Brothers, me, Marilla Khalil, and Marilla TC. And our uncle joined the group later on and became the Fantastic LDs. Now, we used in Staten Island, only on Staten Island, doing talent shows and winning all the talent shows. And then one day, this was our first break from Staten Island, you know, which we called the Forgotten Borough, you know, to a lot of people at the time. So our first break was when we did a talent show. It was called the New York City Talent Search. That was a talent show with all the boroughs put together, with Brooklyn, Queens, Bronx, Manhattan, and Staten Island. We was the only group from Staten Island there. And we came in first place. And that woke them up a little bit. Like, oh, Charlotte. These guys from Staten Island. These guys from Staten Island came in first place. So that was good. So we on our way from the talent show, we was on the Staten Island Ferry. We seen this guy, you know, a country guy singing some country songs with guitar.
A Rhinestone Cowboy.
He's singing Rhinestone Cowboy. He had a big guitar case out there. He's making all this money. He was like, wow, this guy's making a lot of money. And my Uncle Jesse from the group was like, yo, I bet you if we sing, we can make money just like him. And we was like, singing on a ferry, it's all races and creed of people. So it was like a little, like, we was a little scared. Like, yo, we just used to singing in the hood in front of, you know, our peoples, man. The projects, man. You know, so what we did was, the diversity of the group is that we love the Jackson 5, Stevie Wonder, but we also like doing Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, and that took the flip on it. Everybody's seen us do all these characters in the boat, and we did it for the first time, made so much money. It was like, oh my God, we got a job here. So our motto was, if you broke,
hit the boat. Yeah.
So that's how that pretty much started on that stat. But when it came to rapping, see, me, Stevie D, I met a partner in Staten Island, a friend named Mercury, who came from the Bronx. He lived in Staten Island, and he was a rapper. And he's like, yo, man, you got to get to the rap stuff, man. I know you guys sing, but you got to get into the rap stuff. So he's like, I said, yeah, so what's up? He says, I call myself Mercury now. I used to be Poppy. Now I changed myself, my name to Mercury, because I came up from the Bronx and learned all the hip hop, you know, and came to Staten Island and tried to teach me. So he taught me how to rap, and I taught him how to sing. So this is the first little seed of coming in R&B hip hop.
So y'all like Drake before Drake.
Yes.
So y'all together was like Drake.
Exactly. So he taught me how to rap and I told him how to sing. And we formed a group called the Force MCs. Not Force MDs yet. It's called the Force MCs. It's called Dr. Rock and the Force MCs. And we pretty much was the first group from Staten Island
Charlotte.
To go uptown, the Harlem World, like you mentioned, right. Harlem World. When Ace mentioned, hey, we got these guys here, they're from Staten Island, everybody started laughing. Like, yeah, go back to Gilligan's Island, man. Come on, how they gonna rap? How they gonna rap?
Initial doubt.
Oh, yeah. When we put it down, everybody's mouth was dropped like, yo.
What did you do, Steve?
Huh?
How'd it go down?
Well, back in the days, like, rap was like routines, like off of shows and stuff. And our first routine was off the Addams Family. So it started, can I do a little bit?
Yeah, yeah, right. Of course. Okay. I ain't even got asked.
All right. It started off like this. Well, I'm the S-T-E-V-I-E-D. Well, hello, everybody. I'm Stevie D. And I'm the M-E-R-C-R-Y. Yeah, I'm Mercury and I'm a so damn fly. You go hip, hop, shoo-wop, the wop, Stevie D, Mercury, and Dr. Rock. Dr. Rock. Dr. Rock. Dr. Rock. Dr. Rock. Check it. When people come to see him, he has the beat to treat him. His records are in a museum. They call him Dr. Rock. The Force MCs. 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 Yo, check it. When it comes to rapping, we'll have your feet a tapping. We'll have your hands a clapping. We call the Force MCs. Rocking the spot, Mercury. Rocking the spot, Stevie D. Rocking the spot.
That's the same,
yo, that is so dope. What?
We did that, and they accepted us on the spot. They kept. We was the talk of New York. Yo, these guys from Staten Island. Where Staten Island came up here, you know. So then they started biting us back and back. That's how we made a name in the rap, and we was the first, like, one of the groups out there, like, harmonized. We had the best harmonizing type rap style that a lot of people, like Drake, is doing right now. We had that back in the days, and we was called the Force MCs. And then we can talk about how we got the record deal.
With okay, you next. Well, because Mr. Magic was very instrumental.
Yes, he was.
Right.
In helping you guys out.
Mr. Magic actually seen us performing on the Staten Island Ferry as the LDs, though. Seen the singing part of us. You know, because I was in two groups. He didn't know. He heard of the Force MCs with me and Mercury, but never met us. He didn't. Like, someone told him about us. Say, yo, it's these guys called the Force MCs from Staten Island. Dope. But Mr. Magic didn't see us. He seen the fantastic LDs, me, Khalil, TC, and Jesse singing on a boat, doing all the Elvis and the Jackson 5 and stuff. He said, yo, man, I got to sign you guys, man. You guys got to get a record deal, man. I'm telling you, man. You guys sound good, man. And he's really hyped up. And he says, I'm going to bring you guys to Tommy Boy Records. That's what I got to bring you guys. Meet me. He said, meet him on 90th Street, 1st Avenue. I got Tom Silverman has to hear you guys sing. So we went there, brought Mercury, everybody along, sung for him, did the hip hop. Then me and Mercury broke into the rap. And he's like, I want to sign you guys on the spot.
Rapperoni.
Right.
On the spot.
Again, for the audience out there who may not be familiar, first of all, Google Mr. Magic. But just to help jog you along, like, if there's an equivalent, Mr. Magic back in the day, maybe like Funkmaster Flex. Like,
exactly.
He was at a point. Like, if Flex gets your record and drops a bomb, it's a go.
He broke so many rap. Mr. Magic broke so many rappers' career. He was the one that introduced the world to the New York City, the hip hop. They call the show the Rap Attack. He was like, he had the access to get all these rappers on radio, and they became very famous over Mr. Magic.
Was it even a question when you got that record deal offered to you, like, to take it right away? Or was it just, like, something that you were just like, hell yeah, and just jumped on?
Yeah, we jumped on it. You know, the contracts wasn't right. We just said, who cares? We want to be on TV. we regretted that after a while.
Right, you learned the lesson later.
Yeah, we learned a big lesson later, man. You know.
Then it was actually Tom Silverman who
signed
created the name also, right?
Yeah, did you come up with the name? Yeah, Tom Silverman, because you got to think, when Mr. Magic seen us on the ferry, he seen us as the LDs. So when we got to Tom Silverman's office, and he seen us singing, and then we started singing, doing all the singing stuff, and then he says, yo, plus we rap too. So me and Mercury started rapping, and Dr. Rock was beating on the table. We started doing rap routines. So he says, since we brought Mercury and Dr. Rock and Trisco, who's another guy we met on a boat, who's in a group called Cook Corporation, and we met him on a boat and told him that we're going to audition. He came along with us. So he says, so you guys named the LDs. So what happened was the LDs is as Lundy's and Jesse, our uncle, as Daniels, with Mercury added on and Trisco, as they had different letters to their last name, so we couldn't say LDs because it didn't represent everybody's last name. So Force was more safe because it can take everybody's last name without distracting everybody's last name. So we used Force to cover up everybody's last name, and we couldn't say MCs because we sung a lot. We were singers too, so we had to take the C off the MCs and put the D from the LDs on that on the MDs and put it as MDs as musical diversity because we're very versatile.
The blend of all of those names.
Yeah, it's a little complicated, but you know.
But it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense.
I think you got it, right?
Yeah, no, I got it.
Rob's like,
yeah.
Now, once you got the record deal, though, Tom Silverman, Tommy Boy, couldn't sell you guys singing Elvis Presley.
Right.
And
right.
Jackson 5, so you had to come up with original material.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Tears.
No, yeah. Actually.
The first one was Let Me Love You.
Let Me Love You.
Let Me Love You is the first one that actually Uncle Jesse came up with a melody. He came up with a melody. He came to time where, yo, I got it. He said, you guys got the original songs? You guys can do everybody else. You guys got the original songs. Let me hear four some D's now. Let me hear you guys now. So that's when Jesse, you know, came up. Let me love you in the sunshine. Let me hold you, baby, all night. Let me touch you in the moonlight. Let me love you. Gonna make you all mine.
Yeah, you know,
just like that.
Lord. I am just, loving this. Just like that.
Just like that.
It's so and that's what got Tommy to say, like, it's a go, right? A go. That was the debut single, wasn't it?
He had pens. Yeah. He had a contract. We didn't know what it said. He had pens. You guys ready? Yeah.
Now, what I want to know is...
okay.
It's real. But I want to know is who chose the outfits? Because y'all had the sweater vest with the F. Y'all was looking real collegiate.
Right.
Can I break that down for you?
Mm-hmm, please.
Okay. Let me break this down.
Wait, the letter changed, didn't it? At one point it was the F, and then there was...
No, it stayed with the F.
It was always F?
Let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you exactly what happened. We're in Tommy Boy's house, right? And Tommy Boy have all these old record, doo-wop records and stuff. And on the top of that pile of records was Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers.
Mm.
And they was a group, you know, no.
Remember that back?
Yeah.
Too young, man.
Tell you about the ABCs.
B-A-F-A-B. I love you. Yes, I do. Says so when those books of love. Doo-wop back in the day.
Okay, they was a big group in the 50s. Okay, right?
Yeah, the 50s, 60s.
Yeah, it was a big group. So they had the Letterman sweaters with the T's on. So Tommy Boy's. So my brother TC was a really deep doo-wop fan also, and Trisco. He was like really deep into the doo-wop. And TC says, oh, my God, what you know about Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers? He said, oh, man, that's one of my favorite groups. And that's this is Tommy Boy.
Yo, it's Tom Silverman. Yeah.
And then you know a big light bulb with his head. Bing! I have an idea for you guys. What if I guys make you like a doo-wop with the hip-hop and put it together like Frankie Lyman? You guys like the Frankie Lyman of hip-hop and take... Instead of the T's, put F's for force on your chest. We didn't like it, but we wanted a record deal.
But yeah! Tommy said when.
Tommy, I can't believe you thought of that. You a mind reader.
You guys willing to fry your hair?
Yes.
Yeah, slick your hair, make the waves.
You got snow grease? We're going to have stuff.
Are we going to be on TV? Yes, whatever. You know, so we just agreed with it. Right. But you know, Tommy was very big into gimmicks, so that was like a gimmick for him, like, you know, like Humpty Hump had the nose and Flavor had the big clock, you know, UTFO, the Kangaroo. They just he wanted to get for us to stand out in front of other groups. So it was a smart idea for the 80s because it did stand out. But you know, guys, the big F's on their shirt, you know, that stood out. It's like, let me give you an example. If you had a big bowl, threw all the groups in there floating around, and you see guys floating with F's on their chest. Well, these guys are the force of these. At least I know that.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the standout.
Something to distinguish you from everyone else.
Distinguish us from everybody else. That's what he did. And that was a good idea. You know, plus we brought that little ooze, a lot of the ooze, the doo-wop style with the hip-hop beats and stuff. So that was definitely a plus to our sound.
This was about 84?
Yes,
84. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, but, and this goes back again, like, and I hate to be like one of them guys that be like, well, back in my day, but like every rapper, every act looked different. So you would have the Force MDs.
Exactly.
Slick Rick had the eye patch. Right. Nobody looked like Slick.
Exactly.
Nobody looked like Public Enemy. They were so militant. NWA came and they looked.
Run DMC had the little derby hats on. Nobody, you know, like, everybody had their own distinctive
signature.
Style.
Swag.
You know, Houdini, you know, Ecstasy had the big hat on. And, you know,
some looked like cowboys. Africa Bambaataa looked like he came out of a spaceship.
It's the Funkadelic, you know. Right.
So there was no confusing.
Exactly.
And that's the rapping dude.
The
music is the same way. Everybody, it was a distinct sound. You pretty much can like staple who was who. Everybody didn't sound too much the same. Everybody had their own kind of like signature sound, which was important.
Right.
Well,
y'all started developing y'all signature sound around the time, I jumped the gun a little bit, but around the time of Tears, because it is when TC kind of was pushed to the forefront, right?
The falsettos.
It was like, let me just give you an example. Like on Let Me Love You, if you listen to that record, right? It, you know, it goes, TC goes, "You're part of every..." That was the first taste of his falsetto. And he went back to his nest. "In every move I make..." So, Robin Haplin, who was Tommy Boy's wife, who produced a lot of our earlier records, The Tears, The Here I Go Again.
He kept it in the family.
Right. Everybody just knew he had some brothers producing our stuff. "Yeah, bro, put that in there, brother." No, it was a white lady there. You know, a lot of them dead soon.
White soul. White soul.
Vanilla soul. Right. So, She noticed TC's just falsetto, and us being the, you know, for the musical diversity, imitating a lot of singers, and you know, just by the ferry boat experience, TC and Jesse was definitely one of the top. "Do this person. Can you do this person?" And then all she said is, "TC, you have like a Smokey Robin like voice when you did that little part in Let Me Love You." I said, "Can you do how Smokey Robinson sings?" And he says, "Yeah," and he did it. He did it to the T, and they heard it. Everybody's in the studio was like, "Yo, TC, man, you know, he put his
that
his falsetto. He had a natural voice, but his falsetto was the texture in his falsetto just really melted people, and they said, "Yo, we got something here." That's when Tears was actually our first top 10 record, man.
Right.
Tears, not Let Me Love You, Forgive Me. Tears was the record that broke the barrier for us.
And because it was moving TC to the lead.
Yes. Because Jesse was really good. Jesse, Trisco, they were really all good.
Everybody was leading pretty much like, it was pretty like from on the boat, everybody would do little lead, different songs and stuff like that. Mm. But when Tommy Boy asked for the record, Jesse came up with the hook, and pretty much TC and Jesse went back and forward. So it's pretty much, it was like, depending on what the record was, but when TC, the spotlight got right on TC, yo, you hold it down right here, it was a rap-a-roni.
It really kind of like, it, when Tears went top 10, they said, "Okay, that's the voice that goes top 10 right there. That voice right there is, put them to the top 10 real easy." So that's when they said, "We got some." It's like, you know, doing dish or whatever. "Hey, Ralph," he sings a song and it goes to top 10. So, yo, that's the voice that is working with that formula right there. So that really much, pretty much was that.
So then y'all come around to the next album. And what's amazing is Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Everybody's heard of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. Hits on hits on hits on hits.
Oh, yeah, man.
But before the Force MDs, they ain't had very many hits.
They didn't.
So they produced a song for you guys. Did they write it as well?
Yeah.
Okay, so they wrote and produced a song for you guys called Tender Love.
Exactly.
Classic.
Yeah.
And it was Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis's first top 10 hit ever.
I mean, let me explain that to you, man. That's a crazy story. You know, before I get to that real quick, Itching for a Scratch was a definitely record to describe the Force MDs.
Itching for a Scratch.
That puts on.
Those dances.
That's a real pure formula of R&B and hip hop
right there. And it's a metaphor, right?
Exactly. It's a metaphor. Itching for a Scratch. And plus, we did all the Michael Jackson and James Brown, all that in the song. Okay, now let's get to Tender Love.
Itching for a Scratch.
Okay. And plus, it's another one. But let me say something. All right. Now, Tender Love, it was, now, the movie Crush Groove was a classic hip hop movie. I don't know if y'all seen it.
Oh, I saw Crush Groove.
Okay.
I got a story for it.
Okay, well, we was originally supposed to have been in the movie ourselves, but they made a last minute change and put new addition in the movie. That's what he did. My secret. Mm. Ooh. I love them, but they didn't fit the movie like it looked like. But, you know, just didn't fit as that hip hop, you know. We was more of the hip hop R&B group to fit that. But, you know, it wasn't, it, we wasn't mad because it was a gift and a curse at the same time. We didn't get in the movie, but they says, guys, since you couldn't get in the movie, would you mind being on the soundtrack? We said, hell yeah, why not? We got, these are the words we says, we got nothing to lose. He said, okay. So they said, we're going to get some producers to produce a song. Now, the producers, Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam, shopped the song around to a couple of other singers before it got to us, like Freddie Jackson. Nobody wanted to do Tender Love.
Freddie Jackson could have Tender Love?
He turned it down. He turned it down. So they said, hey, guys. Now, from them hearing Tears, from Jam and Lewis hearing Tears, they became fans of the group. They liked our soulful sounds. They said, yo, I think the Force and D's would be perfect for this. So we went in the studio with them. We went in there for 2 hours and recorded that song.
Took 2 hours.
2 hours to record the song. We did it. And Jesse, I got to say, he's one of the guys in the group. He's the hyper guy in the group. Yo, man, it needs drums, man. It got to have drums, man. And they kept saying, no, Jesse, you don't need no drums, man. It's good like this. Just sexy like this. Nah, man, if it don't got drums, it ain't going to be a hit. This is the guy in our group saying this. And Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam looked Jesse in his face. And Jesse, I guarantee this is going to be a hit without the drums. Jesse looked real stupid. A couple of months after that, he looked, he said, hey, they was right.
Now, Chris, have you ever saw Crush Groove?
No, I haven't.
Okay, Crush Groove, straight out of Compton, N.W.A., mm-hmm. right?
I still haven't seen Straight Outta Compton, actually.
Amazing movie.
Guys, yeah, I still have not seen that movie.
Dope. Before Straight Outta Compton, Crush Groove was the original. It wasn't like... It was the story of Def Jam Records and how Def Jam Records was started. But, like, yeah. they didn't necessarily play each other. Like, they changed the character's name, but it was still the story of Def Jam.
Right.
So it was like LL, how like he got signed.
And Fat Boys.
Run DMC, the Fat Boys was in it.
That was a couple of people in there. That was a great movie. Blow,
Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
But like you said, it was the story of Def Jam.
The story of Def Jam. And there was a love scene. In that
Sheila E was in
there. Blair Underwood.
And I was a little too young. That might have been the first. What came first? Was it Crush Groove or was it Purple Rain?
Wow, that's a good one.
I think Crush Groove came first.
I think I was a little too young to probably watch it. Now, first of all, I got put on the hip hop from my sister,
right.
my brother and my sister. So whatever they watched, I was just the annoying little kid. And I think the first love scene I ever seen. It was either Crush Groove or Purple Rain. It was one or the other. I can't remember. So Crush Groove came first. It was Crush Groove. And it was just like, you walk in the room like, what?
Yeah.
What are they doing?
And in the old are you?
And in the background is playing
Tender Love.
So the Force MDs is the soundtrack. Every time I make love now or whatever,
it's
influenced by that. Mm-hmm. I had to be like 5 or 6 years old at that time.
Mm-hmm. And you remember that? That's crazy.
I remember
it's in his brain.
I gotta see this now, and I gotta watch it from like a 5-year-old Rob Markman point of view.
Yeah, you know something, man? Tender Love definitely opened the doors really big for Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam. They made a couple of songs back then, but that was the door opener song for them. Because right after Tender Love came out, Janet Jackson came out. What have you done for me lately? All that came after Tender Love. They reopened all the pop station doors for them. You know, right. they paid attention to them more because of Tender Love. And so many other records came after that, and you know, even New Edition, they got on the Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam bandwagon, and he made some great classics for them.
Everybody's up on that bandwagon.
You know, Can You Stand the Rain? If It Isn't Love, right. So it was. We definitely, you know, they thanked us on the Grammys. That made us feel real good. We wasn't there. We just watched the TV. Hey, they just said our names. Yeah, like thank the Fours and D's. Damn, we'd like to thank the guys for.
I feel like you guys kind of describe it in a way where sometimes you guys were always in that underdog position at one point.
Yeah.
But you guys opened up for New Edition, right?
So yes. Three tours. For 3 straight tours, we opened up for New Edition.
What was the chemistry like on the road? Did y'all get along? Was there competition?
It was competition on stage. Friendly, you know, competition. We friendly competition, but you know, I ain't going to say they know the deal with that. We had some times, you know, they had some times. There was a lot of people saying we did this, and some people say they did, you know, but we was major competition for them because we was both, we was more the street group from New York, you know, from singing, all the experience from singing on a boat in Times Square, and they were straight from Boston, like the straight like the Jackson 5, you know, had the steps like, you know, and it really was marketed heavy like the Jackson 5, but...
And they just, was polished, but they was polished.
It's very polished. We just had like a more street edge than they had, like a little more versatility. That's right. The word. That's what we and had over New Edition.
2 years older, so our voice was a little more mature and really...
Yeah.
A little different, but they was good at what they was doing, and we was good at what we was
and
doing.
And this is the time, because New Edition also evolved and to where they got a little more adult. But this is back more so like Candy Girl, Popcorn Love.
Yeah.
Like
they were still
Mr. Telephone Man.
Right. So this wasn't yet like... This wasn't that girl. This Poison. You know what I'm saying? BBD. Like, it wasn't that mature
BBD
yet.
Admits, you know, they on our, actually on a documentary, and they admit to us, yo, man, we got the hip-hop R&B from y'all. That influenced us for making those Poisons and all those. We got that from y'all. Yo, you know, y'all start. They admit that we started. I'm saying this coming mm-hmm. out their mouth. This is mm-hmm. what they said. And, you know, what gets us, when us in New Edition, like, we was those two boy bands from the 80s, that R&B boy bands that really opened the doors for so many groups, the Jodeci's, the Boys and Men. We the definitely the two pioneer groups that opened the doors for those cats. And now Boys and Men is actually one of our documentaries too. They, you know, I said they got, think about it now when I say it, they got the collegiate look, sound, style. They came out of Motown. Looked like they came out of college, right? The little collegiate look, like the F's, the Letterman sweaters. Mm. They came out with that look, you know, just after us. They really admired us and liked our style. So they came out with that more of a doo-wop-ish type style, too, when they came out. But, you know, it's all love, man.
That makes sense.
long as we feel we influence people and they doing anything, you know, it's all love to us. We ain't no haters. We just congratulate, man, you know. And, you know, we don't get the credit we deserve at times, but... Hey, that happens. It happens to people.
It happens so often to some of the best,
yes,
honestly.
Exactly.
But we're going to give you that credit today. If nobody going to give you that credit, we're going to give you that credit here. But I do see it, like, you know, I was watching Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, like, and they give it up. Like,
yeah.
The facts are the facts. They're like, yo, you know, Force MDs was the first.
Yeah.
You know, and it really helped. I want to talk about when that look changed, though. The second album. Okay, I want to talk about Chilling, because... I told y'all
hold
that.
Hold up. Rob's going into a book bag.
Yeah, I'm going
to my bag.
What are you pulling out from that bag right now?
I told y'all that, like.
If any Jerry girl, because I got to tell them.
Yeah.
My sister put me on to a lot of music, so I would only always listen to whatever she listened to. Whatever records she got, it was like our records. So, you know, and she probably whooped my ass a couple of times to go through a crate.
Sister had the heavy hand, huh?
But I went back to my mother's house. Oh, and dug this up, Chilling.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. First of all, Steve is a Sagittarius.
Yeah.
On the back of the album cover. If y'all listening now, Force MD's Chilling. Okay, so y'all can see the album cover. Y'all can see what we're seeing right now.
It's a Jules, man.
Rob just pulled out the vinyl. This is...
Yeah, I just pulled out the vinyl. Yeah. That's what I did. I pulled out the record, the original.
The actual original record, corners peeling and everything.
Yes. You say it had the style change, right?
The style changed a lot because there's no... They got fur coats and gold chains.
Look at the Jerry curl.
And shags.
Got these apps now.
Had to go back to the project.
Let me tell you something, man.
To the block.
Let me tell you something. Let me break that down to you. Let me say something, man. The Letterman sweaters was all lovely until we just... New Edition was the main person that made us change that, because they just kept coming up with these fly outfits. We kept wearing these Letterman sweaters, and we just felt like, dang, we gotta be more cooler. You know, this is good. We can do this, but we gotta be a little more cooler. So we said, yo, we told Tommy Boy, could we just come out dressing the way we want to dress for once? And he says, okay, long as you keep the F somewhere in fashion, it's cool. That's all you had to tell us.
You got a fry yet this time. You can put the activated this time, all right?
We went straight to Delancey Street.
Okay.
And just got the real pimped out look. And people was like,
where'd you get the chains from?
We got them from downtown New York in Brooklyn.
Albee Square?
Yes.
Albee Square Mall. Yep, we got the guys make them. Yep.
That, again, another lesson, like, for y'all listening, like, if you wanted to get your gold pieces, if you was anywhere from New York,
that's right,
you had to go to Albee Square. But you had to be official to go to Albee Square Mall, because it got a little crazy.
That's right. So,
be waiting for you outside.
And the whole deal, the big deal on this is, we came out like this. Everybody just knew we was rich. Like, damn, yeah, lend me some money.
I remember being a kid and like staring at that album cover, like,
yeah, man. Yeah, rings on all. Look at rings on all four fingers. We just
on Instagram, it pops up a lot as a throwback. You know what I mean?
Right.
Retro. Yeah,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. Like, wow. That is such an awesome cover. Yeah, yeah.
We're going to have fun on Thursday with this. Yeah. Yep. And is that Mercury wearing, is he wearing a Tommy Boy chain?
Yeah.
And did Tom Silverman pay for that?
No, nah, he Mercury just paid homage to him. Mercury just paid homage to him, man. And just like, you know, say, yo, I'm going to get a Tommy Boy chain.
Yo, is that the original Rockefeller chain? Is that, that might be the first, what other label had, who else was rocking the label chain?
Hey, think about that.
Think
that
about
a lot of things. I be thinking about like who really did the real collabs, and us and the Fat Boys, the R&B group, and the rap. We did a lot of little stuff, man. That's when he first did the collab with the Fat Boys.
Let me add something on. You know, because I definitely don't want you to miss this. It's like going back to you talking about the Force MCs time.
Oh yeah.
I want you to just keep this in mind. Stevie D and Mercury, they didn't write their raps down. Everything was off top of their head, freestyling. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you know, the routines was put together, you know what I mean? But even the routines, they never wrote the routines down.
There was no pen and paper.
Yeah, there was no pen and paper. And most of the time after the routines, the raps was free. Everything was off top of the head.
Yeah.
All the time. Another thing is, like I said, you know, a lot of people don't know that. So when we hear about Freestyle Fridays and all stuff like that, we go way back. Like, yo, it was freestyling back then because it was just freestyling off top of your head. Another thing to keep in mind, going back to Harlem World, every now and then, you know, the whole group would come up there. Jesse, when he was a little kid, Jesse used to play the drums, right? He used to play the drums. So if no music came out, Jesse started making the music with his mouth, making the beat with his mouth. That, you know, a lot of people acknowledged at that time, that was the first time I see somebody doing a beatbox up in Harlem. Wow.
In Harlem World, yeah.
In Harlem World. He was doing a beatbox while he was doing the routines. But a lot, you know, when you see our documentary, Force MDs Relive, you're going to hear different people say, yeah, that's the first time I seen somebody doing a human beatbox back then.
This is before, because Dougie Fresh is from Harlem, so this is before Dougie?
Let me tell you something. You can go on YouTube right now and see Dougie admitting it. Yeah, Jesse did it first, but I did this to it.
And I, you know.
Dougie's going to also say, Stevie D was the first I seen freestyle anybody. I've never seen nobody ever do that.
Run from DMC.
Run from DMC.
Big Daddy Kane.
Ask him. Have you ever seen him?
Big Daddy Kane.
Yeah. Because I used to just rhyme on people, like rhyme on what you had on, all this. Nobody uptown was doing that. Nobody was doing that. Everybody had notepads. You know, us coming from Staten Island, like, what the hell do you do out there? How do you just do that? Yeah, Jesse did the beatbox just playing around, but the response from the crowd was so crazy. Like, yo, you know, Doug was there when that happened. But then we came back a couple of weeks later. Dougie just had it to like a whole another level. Like, boop, 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 boop. Like, yo, how'd you learn how to do that? She's, yo, man, yo. The blueprint, I just say the blueprint came from Jesse, but Dougie, like, mastered. That's why like, you know, he's considered like the beatbox, but you know, he mastered the whole style. But Jesse was just doing it because Jesse was so into Michael Jackson. He was just so deep, but he could do the beatbox. He called the human Lindrum. Yo, that's how he's doing. No, I could do it. Stop.
This is dope.
Come on, don't get me started.
this is going back to the
80s. No,
this is dope. So I didn't know that the beatbox came from y'all, especially to be like we took it to Harlem.
You
may hear something different. We just telling you our perspective.
Of course. Story.
From where we up there, was nobody doing it.
But I feel like you guys did have such a street feel to you guys. Yeah. I mean, aside from all the singing and all the R&B, I mean, even the little doo-wop that you incorporated, you guys definitely had, even in performances, performances when you impersonated like James Brown and everybody, you guys had such a street swag.
Yeah, that's where we came from, man. It was definitely a big part of our whole, the combination with us together, you know, so.
Musical diversity.
Now, let's talk about the business a little bit. Let's talk, because Tender Love was such a huge hit, and you're still here today, and it's so heavily sampled. I mean, like Bone Thugs, Alicia Keys, Kelly Rowland, you know what I'm saying? Backstreet Boys,
Trina.
Do you guys still see, was the business set up that when these things get sampled, that you still see royalties, that you still profit off of
Terry,
this?
You know, see, Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam wrote that.
Right.
Only thing we get from that is performance royalties. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, if you play it on the internet, you get Sound Exchange royalties, mm-hmm. you know, and Abs got performance royalties. Other than that, you know, if you're the writing producer, that's you make the cake from that. You know
okay.
Mean? Like when the records come out, you get the royalties from the records and stuff like that. But pertaining to like the publishing and all that, that's Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam.
Okay.
Like the biggest check we got off Tend to Love from the publishers, maybe like $7. But you know, that was like they took tax out. I'm just playing with that. You should have seen their faces just now. Like,
it got real quiet for a second.
I'm messing with
you. Run up on Tom Silverman, man. Like,
come on, man. Give him something.
Right.
Let him live, man.
Right. Nah, man. But how do y'all feel about that, though, when y'all hear people still sample Tend to Love?
It's a pleasure hearing them. It's a compliment to us, man. You know, especially when you hear, this one really got me, bro. When we see new kids on the block singing Tend to Love in their show. That's a big song it is in their show. And they do it in stadiums full of people and everybody sing along. And then we've seen Alicia Keys on tour doing it, you know.
Wiz Khalifa.
Yeah, man. It's just like, you know.
It keeps, by the song staying alive, it keeps us working. Us working, you know what I mean? Because it's like it's something that is transcending generations, you know what I mean? So it's kind of like we always working because of songs. That's the good thing about having hit records or timeless classic records. It keeps you working because, you know, it's just people. It's like, even though most of our audience is older, but the song still connects to different generations now because it transcended time.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and all we really waiting on it, man, is just one time. I don't care if New Kids on the Block, Alicia Keys, anybody. Invite us to the stage and sing. Just say, hey, I got the 4SMDs. Y'all come on the stage and help us sing this song.
I don't know why that hasn't happened.
That's right. We're just waiting on something like that to happen.
It's got to happen.
It got to happen.
We're going to make that happen.
When you talk about the influence that y'all have on the younger generation now to come out of Staten Island, yeah, had to have been an inspiration for the Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not easy to come. And even now, we don't. Wu-Tang was 20 years ago. I mean, shout out to Mac Wiles.
Yeah.
You know, doing this thing. But it's still very hard for artists to get out of
Staten. Yeah, the UMCs.
Yep.
Shaheen.
Yep.
You know, Aftershock.
Aftershock. And like you said, Mac Wiles.
Gregory Abbott.
Yeah, Gregory Abbott, too.
But you guys. 1996, Ghostface Killah calls.
Yes.
It says, hey, man, I'm putting together this out. You guys were like on 3 or 4 tracks on Ghostface's first album.
We
are
the G-O-D, and we came to rock the spot with Iron Man stars. We be the illest MCs of the world today.
You on point with that right there. Yeah.
Yo, Ma, say with the 4SMDs.
Wait, does your sister know you took that record?
Yeah.
No, okay.
I texted my sister last night.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. That was a good thing.
That's funny.
That was a good time.
Yeah, you know the Daytona 500. That was really, it was fun doing that. We did
Soul Control.
Wu-Tang will spot. Every time it will. Yeah, all that.
He's like, damn, TC.
Yeah.
Why?
It's crazy because that was a classic Wu-Tang.
Ghost don't drop whack albums, first of all. That was the first. It was so funny at the time because coming up as a Wu-Tang fan, Ghost wasn't the original star. Like, you know, people know this, I think. Method Man, obviously.
Yeah, and ODB.
ODB. You know, And people were sleeping on Ghost. Yeah, when Raekwon came out.
Deck was moving at that time, too, from the Cream joint. You know what I mean?
Deck used to be my favorite.
Yeah.
I love Deck. No disrespect. Deck used to be my favorite Wu-Tang member until his first solo album came out. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
That wasn't it. But Ghost has arguably been the strongest.
Yeah, like solo guy.
And
like
most consistent solo guy. Not even arguably. He's been the strongest and most consistent solo guy out the clan. And you guys helped set that career off. Daytona 500 was huge.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just really happy. I'm just so happy that we finally got a stat down a collect connection. You know, it was like, they know about all our Force MC tapes. They know all our rap routines from back in the days, man. They knew all this stuff. So they was fans of ours, some Force MCs and Force MDs. So it was an easy transition. Us going in there and just do it, just laughing. You know, TC and doing all it. Sickness, man. Yo, you can do this too. my girl, they had us with everything. Like, you can sing a picture by golly, because they love old soul stuff. So right. They just had us singing everything.
Born by the river.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh man,
but Soul Controller.
My girl's one of my favorites.
One thing we was like, oh, what happened on the Daytona 500 song? They didn't have our name on it.
Right.
You noticed that, right?
Right. Yeah.
That's the only thing. Like people, they know it really was us. Like until they say something, you know.
And then also, I mean, so how did it come up? Because the hook for Daytona 500 kind of bars the melody from Turn the Beat Around, right?
Right.
Was it one of those instances that was like, yo, sing that?
That was one of our rap routines from the Force MCs back in the day.
Okay.
This is a Force MC routine. All you MC start realizing that we are called the Force, the best harmonizing crew that ever came into the party singing. A message to the other MCs we're bringing. Everywhere we go, we know that we are.
That's how he's doing back in the Force.
So because they know all our rap routines from and they say, yo, do this one, man. Yo, can y'all do this one? That? We're like, yo, so we just try to figure out what routine to go
up. So we just put chains where all your MCs start realizing that Ghost got that shit that'll keep you vibing. The Wu is here to bring you Shaolin's finest. And if your skills is weak, you better step behind us. Oh.
That is such a dope melody to me. Both versions, even though the dance version is like,
yo, this is what put the dagger in our heart, man. When they called us, yo, man, we gonna shoot the video tomorrow, Staten Island, man. So y'all come on through, man. We gonna do this. And we was like, good, because Wu-Tang is the hottest thing. They gonna help make us more relevant. Just us getting that
right.
And then it poured down raining that day. And they made it to a cartoon video.
Yeah, they damn, is that the reason why? For those who remember, the Daytona 500 video was it was scenes from Speed Racer.
Yeah, Speed Racer, man. Oh, that hurt it.
It was the rain. Like we could have got a real video if it didn't rain that day.
I just wish we could. Well, we never did a video together, man. As a Staten Islanders, man.
I guess when you have that many people involved, also schedules and stuff. I don't know if that was the issue, but
we was just on standby. Like, right. Yo, just call us. We coming out there, man.
Have you ever performed that with Ghost?
Yeah. Like, what, 3-4 times?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, the big response, man. It's really great response off that, man.
Okay. Another record I want to talk about. One of my favorites. My two favorite records from you guys is Tender Love and Love is a House.
Love is a House. You got the key. Mm. Yeah, man. Let me tell you a story on that real quick.
Producers from London.
Yeah, these producers from London actually produced that. Now, Tender Love is such a big hit. It's a pretty hard song to follow, you know, Tender Love. So these producers came out to Tommy Boy Rex. Hey, guys, I got this song for you, the Force MDs. They got the same song, yeah. I'm telling you, this is a number one hit. They got a hit. So Tommy Boy goes, hey, guys, come in the office, man. He gave us all these cassette tapes. I want you guys to listen to this song for like a week. Let us see if it marinates in your brain. Do you guys like the song? Listen, it was a female singing on there. It's a female singing on there. Look for the light if you're lost in the night. Now, we know like she had a higher voice. You know, TC, that's his style. He can get falsetto up there. So, listen to it. First heard it, didn't click until that bass. So that bass line is high. And then. He's like, okay, we need to do something like this, man. I said, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, so we went in the studio,
quoted the song. The London guys, they really perfect. They real perfectionists. Okay, guys, I want you to just listen to and do what you guys do, man. So we went in there and just did it, put some flavor on it, and next thing you know, it became a number one hit, man. Mm. Like, wow, these guys are right. We felt good. Like, all right, we followed Tender Love or something. That was a good follow up.
An amazing song. Now,
and it came from a female. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Teddy Riley comes around because you guys are on fire right now. You're smoking.
Yeah.
And Teddy Riley wants to work with you guys. And for me, we talk about Teddy Riley a couple times on this podcast. I think Teddy Riley is one of the most underrated producers in music. The dude invented his own genre.
Jack Swing.
Yes, indeed.
He's who Michael Jackson called when Michael Jackson needed a hit.
Yes.
You know, but Teddy wanted to work with you guys, which could have taken you even another level.
Oh, so right.
But you didn't work with Teddy. What happened?
Yeah, well, what happened, you know, being on a label like Tommy Boy, you know, he had merged with Warner Brothers. Keep in mind, Tender Love was instrumental with him.
Merging with Warner Brothers.
With Warner Brothers. But it was still like, it being a hip-hop label, it really wasn't equipped to promote and build an R&B group. You follow me? Because the R&B budget is different than a hip-hop budget. You know, the hip-hop, you know, budget is a little cheaper, it's a little easier to promote, and it was easy to flip. So when it came to getting producers that's relevant, that can keep you going up, it was always an issue of pretty much paying for the producers, because Tommy Boy pretty much mentality was like a cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's like, pay less and get more out.
Yeah.
You know how to get more out. So when it came from Teddy Riley, like, yo, you guys, fire, I want to do something with you guys, and this is what I want. It's like, it's a problem with paying that. Just like the guys from London. When the guys from London produced a number one hit, he didn't want to follow back up there and pay them for that. Pay Same as with Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam. So
didn't want to pay them.
What happens is, if it's contrary to the fact, it didn't happen. If Teddy Riley would have came on board, it would have, the song, the music and the group would have went into another decade strong, loaded with strong music.
Catalog.
And even able, a strong catalog, and even able could have, from that point on, even connected with the Babyfaces or reconnected back with the Jam Lewis. But like I said, he's an independent guy, you know, and like I said, you know, it's like, it's just a different mentality.
What year was this? What year was this when Teddy Riley
was? This was 88.
Yeah.
So this is right around the time like Guy probably had just popped off.
That's my favorite guy.
That's my joy.
He had the magic.
You know, we was definitely a group that paved the way for them guys too, because they, you know, we was that group. Us and New Edition was like those groups that, so Teddy really saw something in us. Yo, I want to work with these guys. And you know, what Tommy Boy did pretty much is, he, like, you got to think about this, he didn't have to pay Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam for that record, because that's off a soundtrack of the movie. The movie paid for that. Itching for a Scratch, he didn't have to pay them for that. That was from the movie.
That was on Rapping, right?
Yes, yeah. It was a Rapping, a movie Rapping. So Tommy Boy got a lot of free records he didn't have to come out of his pocket with. So if you really think of the history, he never paid Terry Lewis and Jimmy Jam to do a song for us. Really bad. We got a free song from them. And I'm just saying, if I was in his shoes, yo, this guy just made a classic record for them. Let me use them guys again. He never wanted to pay them and use them.
At one time, he didn't want to make videos.
Yeah.
It was like a... But like I said, that's neither here nor there, because once you get a platform, you know, you got to be creative enough to keep building it yourself. I don't want to throw all the baking powder on, you know. You got to be able to create, build it yourself. But at the end of the day, those are some of the challenges that as an artist...
The coulda, woulda, the coulda, wouldas.
Yeah, you know,
that could have happened.
Artists,
you know,
you have, you know?
Yeah, we just felt that, you know, Teddy would have definitely been great for us. You know, we would have definitely built our catalog up, but, you know, We used Full Force. They still did great, though.
Yeah, Full Force did a great job. They did. Yeah,
but you know,
Are You Really Real and Walking in the Sunshine.
Yeah, right. But you know, Teddy had the bigger name at the time. You know how the people get, hey, this person produced that.
Yeah. Midas Touch.
Right. Yeah, so it just, that never happened, man. So we just,
Full Force wasn't no joke, though.
No joke, man. Them out dudes right there.
They got with Lisa, and they did the
they did everybody.
One to Take You Home. Slow Joint.
All cried out.
They had some joints. They Full Force definitely had the joints.
Yeah. And they was in House Party, right?
Yeah,
in House Party.
You're freaking in.
Yeah, yeah.
Nah, man. real quick, something I want to talk about. You know, things got heavy for you guys. Originally, I just want you to paint the picture in the 80s coming up. I was watching The Unsung. Shout out to TV One and Unsung. Mm-hmm. They did a wonderful episode, man, on you guys. Thanks, and really got into a part of the story that I didn't know about with Jesse Daniels.
My uncle.
And his addiction.
Yeah.
With crack cocaine. I mean, with crack, like, this is the era where
the crack was just fresh.
So we don't know what the ramifications of this drug is. Like, what was going on in the 80s when the crack epidemic actually hit y'all group, hit y'all family, and almost tore it apart?
Yeah, man, it was unfortunate. It had to hit us, our group. Well, just really Jesse in a group. Mm-hmm. You know, first it was coke. He was doing a little coke. But somebody said, hey, there's a new sheriff in town. His name is Crack. And Jesse just got on that crack boat. Like I explained in Unsung, that no one knew the power of crack at that time, because it just came out, just started hitting the streets. Mm-hmm. People didn't know that you'll do anything for it. You know, you'll sell your kids for it. It was that bad, that it's that powerful. And Jesse just got caught in that trip, and he used to go on tour, on the New Edition tours, and he used to come home and give all his money up. And, you know, he started getting thinner and thinner, and it's like, yo, what is this? We kept saying, man, Jesse, the devil's making you do that crack, man. You got to get on God's side, man. We tried everything. You're right, man. I gotta get some crack. You know, it was just crazy.
It sounds horrible now in 2015, but again, I just want the listeners to know, this was a time when you didn't know what the ramifications of crack. Like, crack.
Nobody knew.
Like,
we just got caught.
It was still unfolding.
If we're keeping it real, a lot of your favorite rappers was smoking crack.
A lot of people got touched.
Like DMX, like I'm saying, let's keep it real. You know, he admits that. It's hard for him to kick that. That's a hard drug to get off of for some people.
I saw Sadat X on the internet talking about, you know, you used to sprinkle a little crack in your blunt or whatever like that, smoke a Wooler, right? Mm-hmm. And this was not like nobody knew what it was. And I'm like, Sadat X? Like, they were some of the most righteous rappers that we knew. How do you get caught up in that? Yeah. But it was so easy to get caught up
in. Yeah, man. That was a tough time, you know, because Jesse was definitely a big piece of the group at the time. And we had to make some real decisions. Like, yo, man, you're messing the group up. You kept missing shows, missing stuff. And he was worried about that crack. Like, we got a show. I'd rather go get some crack. You know, it was like, it got crazy, man. You know, so we had to let him go, man. And, you know, unfortunately, like on Unsung, he went to jail afterwards and did 3 years in jail for selling crack to an undercover cop. Because it got to the point when you're so bad on the crack, and the crack goes, all right, if you ain't got no money, man, sell it for me. You sell it for a couple people. And the first person Jesse did try to sell it to, just trying to get him some free crack, was an undercover cop. Mm. So it wasn't meant for him to do that.
Ain't that crazy?
And he went to jail.
When you watch the history of, like, not just soul music, or, you know, it's just even rock and roll, it's just
heroin,
like Temptations and stuff like that. It's just so crazy how, you know, drugs is so instrumental in pretty much derailing a lot of people's careers and stuff like that. Because one of the things is, a lot of people don't know how to deal with pain. You know what I mean? So they substitute pain, you know, with, you know, the medication and stuff like that. So Jesse was going through a period where he felt he wanted a little more shine, and his outlet was, his pain was getting high, numbing, you know, drugs numb your pain.
Right.
So that's what happens to a lot of groups and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, what's the sad part about it, when you're on the road, you got people following you from city to city.
Yes.
You know, to sell you the drugs, make sure that, you know, you're the biggest customer. Right. So they follow you from city to city.
You get paid yet? You got paid. All right, come on, man.
Yeah, so that's kind of like a real lesson to, because a lot of up-and-coming artists, you know, what happens is you have all this money, you got so many people that's, you know, that you think is on top of the world, but at the end of the day, when they're hurting and stuff in pain, that's what they cling to, their drugs, rather than try to, you know, meditate or seek a higher source to restructures or refocus themselves or look for security, and they put it into drugs and stuff like that. So a lot of younger generations, like, they just SERP, the ecstasy,
the Molly.
You gotta be careful with that,
cause which is horrible too.
Dance is a new thing,
pill, yeah, because you know, what, Eminem, everybody,
the oxycodone at one point.
Yeah, oh my god, you
said I know people that have gotten hooked onto that, and it's horrible. It literally turns you into another person, and it's so hard to kick again.
Yeah.
Going back to that, it's something that, you know, you go into this whole nother world almost, unless you kick it, like, there, you're just stuck in there.
Yeah, it's really hard. Yeah,
crazy. But Jesse is doing well. Oh, he's doing good. He's good now.
He smokes like only. I'm just playing.
Nah, he's just doing a little crack. Just a little crack.
Just a little sprinkle.
Jesse is doing good, and you guys are still out there performing. Still out there doing your thing, waving the flag. How hard is it to be out there? And it sounds like a stupid question. I just want to hear from y'all. You know, without TC, we lost TC, mm-hmm. who passed away, and we lost Mercury.
Yes.
Who passed away. These are songs that you guys, and routines that you developed together. You guys got famous together. Right. And now you're out there without your brothers.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, it's definitely different, but God just works in mysterious ways that my younger brother Khalil sounds just like TC. It's similar. Like, I don't know if you hear, like, DeBarge, the group DeBarge, they all sound alike. You know, Bobby DeBarge, they all sound alike. And we definitely kept the sound with us. And that's a blessing. And Mercury, we missed his energy, but, you know, I got to take that part and just add it on to the show. And but the show's been going really very well, and we ain't really miss a beat too much, and we just, you know, we feel that they're spiritually on the stage with us every night, so we just give it our all, you know, and that's the special part about it, that we know they're with us, you know, and we always gonna miss them, and we always gonna thank what they contribute to the group, and because that was definitely TC's last words of, yo, y'all gotta keep it going, man, and don't stop, you know, and he clearly told Khalil, because when we sing on a boat back in the days, Khalil and TC sounded so similar as naturals and high voices. They sounded so similar. TC personally, TC was in his deathbed. I hate to say that. Mm-hmm. That's the time. But he definitely explained to Khalil, yo, you got to hold it down now, man. You got to step up and come out. And Khalil been doing it ever since. And I'm just proud of my younger brother by doing that. And we're blessed, man, to just still be out here doing it, man.
That's super dope. I'm gonna change gears one time because I gotta know. I gotta know. 1987, y'all going on tour with Madonna.
Oh,
he ain't the Snow Beach, boy. That's my man.
Who knocked down Madonna? Did anybody?
No!
Oh, no, all right, listen, man.
Only twice, man.
Without, like,
oh, man. Twice. Wait a minute.
She wanted to be my girl and everything. I said, no, I can't do that.
Listen,
I'm just playing. I'm playing. I'm really playing.
She's
right,
like,
now.
Listen, I saw you with Kane.
Yeah. Nah.
Just in
Madonna, Europe. Madonna is the nicest person. She, like, really... I can't express how much she looked out for us, man. She didn't have to do what she did, but she was a fan of the group, and we went to a premiere of her movie, Who's That Girl, and she brought the whole Tommy Boy staff and all the record companies there, and she asked Tommy, hey, can you get the guys to come over here and sing me something? And we went over there. Instead of the movie being Who's That Girl, and we had a song called Forgive Me, Girl, so we changed. He said, can y'all sing me something? He says, who's that girl? Her name is Madonna. Who's that girl? He stopped. But we just sung that melody to her, and she just says, I want to put you guys on tour with me because I like how you guys did that. I'm going to put you on tour with me. We thought she was really lying. So Madonna, stop playing. Now you playing. I said, no, I'm dead serious. I was going to get the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but I want you guys.
Oh, man.
So she brought us on tour. We were singing in front of 100.
They was hotter than the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah,
Red Hot, I'm saying the whole shit wrong. Red Hot Chili Peppers is one of my favorites.
They was the cold Hot Chili Peppers back then.
Yeah, they were.
I'm a player.
I wouldn't want them back then.
Nah, nah. But this is before they had that.
This is before they blew up.
Take it to their place.
Scars and shit.
Yeah, this is funny. Really, they was upcoming. They didn't blow up yet. They was an upcoming group like we were. So
Madonna made the right choice.
Yeah, she shows us.
To the hot.
But let me tell you something. Us singing in front of those 120,000 people who didn't know who the hell we was, but what they seen bugged them out. Like, who are these black guys doing? Michael Jackson, James Brown, beatbox, rapping, stuff they just did flipping, not expect. Flipping.
Like Chris Brown.
Break dancing. It was like, holy crap. These guys, it blew their minds. And we gathered a lot of fans out there just on Strength of Madonna. And she used to check on us. Y'all eat? Everybody good? Everybody ate and everything? You know. She was really nice. All I got is nothing but love for her because she really gave us a great opportunity out there, man. Because only place we really been overseas probably was London, but she brought us to all these other countries and, you know, it was great, man. It was great.
Madonna's incredible. And she's another one that distinguishes herself from everybody, too. I mean, it's Madonna.
Down to earth. Really down to earth, man.
I wish I could have seen the show, man, back then.
I really wish, man.
My first concert was Menudo.
Menudo, yeah.
Oh, my God. Go,
again, because of my sister, like, they had Menudo tickets.
Oh, me and London. I know, yeah, you think I don't know? Come on, bro.
Yeah.
I love all this singing.
Yeah. I want to do... one thing with you guys before we start to wrap up. Kristen does a segment every week where we get our guests to give relationship advice. We have a lot of listeners that I feel bad for them, actually, man. Like every week I feel like it's a new situation. But, you know, this week I want to get the Force MDs. I mean, you know, tender love is a house, forgive me, girl. Like,
right. I feel like who better to give some relationship advice? And I wanted to choose, I did two really opposite ones. So they have very different feels, but I kind of want to quickly just get to them. If anybody's listening, the email, again, we say this every week. We get some really great ones and they're fun. They're exciting. It's redlightspecialpc@gmail.com. That's redlightspecialpc@gmail.com. So just email us. You know, we never say the names. We keep it anonymous. And I want to get over this first one. Okay, so someone wrote us and said, "Hey, guys, so me and this guy are not technically in a relationship yet, but that's what the issue is. We've just been dating, I guess, and talking through texts and calls. He's nice and sweet and makes me laugh, which is definitely the main thing that I like about him. But every now and then, I don't hear from him for a few days. He either won't respond to my last text, or I just won't get one from him for a week or so. I feel like I'm more interested than he is, and I don't want to feel like I'm chasing after him." So she's playing the chasing game.
Mm-hmm. I love you, what is that?
Well, I would say this. Look, you know, if you're doing the chasing, that means you're more passionate or more serious about the relationship than he is. So what you want to do is you probably want to catch up with him and just kind of get the temperature of where he's really at with the person. If not, you know, you're going to get disappointed and then probably just, you know, get, you know, in a space where, you know, you're going to be a little hurt and stuff like that. So just try to catch up with him and ask some questions that you can read the temperature a little more and really see if he got that same the same amount of feelings that you got. If not, you know, he may need time or he might not be the person for you at this time.
Yeah. All right. So the next one's a little more spicy.
Stevie.
Yeah. So someone wrote to us and said, "I'm so glad that you guys keep this anonymous and discreet because I'm going through it. I'm in a new relationship and I'm happy as ever, but I've always been a little curious with girls. Nothing serious, but when I drink, I tend to get flirtatious and I end up kissing a girl sometimes. I know my boyfriend isn't fond of that, and he made that very clear, but it did happen this weekend. I got really drunk and kissed a girl that I'm friends with. He was upset, but I don't feel like it was that serious. Is that okay? Is it considered cheating if it's a female that I'm kissing? Help."
Did Katy Perry send that email?
Right?
Well, I don't really feel it's cheating, you know. Long as it was just a kiss, it didn't go no further than a kiss, you know. Some people in other countries kiss is a greeting, you know, but long as it didn't get no further than a kiss and long as y'all didn't sleep together,
I feel it's really not cheating. Your boyfriend needs to understand that. Just talk to him. Say, hey, listen, it only went this far. But it's, you definitely got to get his trust, because he's going to watch you even more and watch you around women even more. Especially when you're drinking, he's going to keep the eye on you even more. So I feel if you got a curiosity, and if maybe one day if you ask me, hey, would you mind if we have a threesome, I have to a girl, trust me, not a lot of guys are going to say no. I know that for a fact. Okay, we can try it just one time. No, let's try it just 15 times. You know, if it's good, he going to want to try it more and more. So, you know, it's definitely get his confidence in you, and let's just let him know that you're real. And
if she's attracted to girls, she's bisexual. She's attracted to both of them, you know, male and female. She's bisexual. So talk to your husband or whoever, your boyfriend, and maybe y'all try some experiment. You know?
That's what I'm saying, real quick. Like, bring her home. Like, listen, relationships is all about sharing, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's like if you're out at lunch, right, and you just had the best Chinese food you ever had, right? You're like, damn, but what you have for lunch today, babe? Oh man, I had the most amazing Chinese food. I'm gonna bring you home some. You know, like bring you half the plate. Like bring him half the plate home.
So
like,
now we're comparing females to Chinese food. I love this.
I'm just saying when you're in a relationship and you have something so good that intrigues you so much, yeah, bring it home.
So now what if the guy is not into that though? Like what if he's not okay with that? Because she said he's not fond of the idea. So what if he's like, no, I don't want to.
I feel like I agree.
I don't think a guy's going to turn out to threesome.
If he's not fond of it, she shouldn't do it. Just right. To respect him.
If I'm being real though.
Yeah.
If it doesn't sit well with him, mm-hmm. then yeah, she shouldn't do it. Or she has to leave him, because if that's who she really is, she has to be herself,
yes,
right?
Yeah, I agree, man.
So she has to either stop it.
So
if
he's
it's not
just
cool
gonna miss
him.
Out on the threesome. That's right. All. He's just
he's gonna take the loss.
Yeah, he's gonna take help.
So there's other guys out there. It's up fishing to see.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I feel like that may just be like a phase kind of thing. You know, I mean, I think every girl has gotten curious at one point or another, but it's something that if you're now going to be in a relationship, I think she said the relationship is new. I mean, you have to decide, I mean, are you willing to throw away that relationship for this fun that you have every once in a while when you drink? Or are you going to be mature enough to be like, you know what? He's not fond of it. Let me stop that and go on with this relationship. I think it's all about the value of the relationship. I mean, is it worth it, you know?
Let me ask you a question now. In this relationship now, if, like you say, the decision comes to him, all right, either I'm going to be, if you're not going to accept me being with her, I'm not going to be with you. Now, if he agrees that, or she says, if you don't want to do this together, like she makes the decision, like, if you want to try this with me, I don't know if I can be in this relationship. If she gives me that ultimatum, if you want to try this, I like women. If you don't accept this about me, I can't be in a relationship. I want somebody that's more outgoing, that's more trying things more, you know. And you know, she might got to end up, he got to make that decision, you know, if he's going to just definitely try it because she likes it, just to let him know that I'm down with you no matter what. I'm with you. Mm-hmm. All right. If it's vice versa, I don't know. If it's a guy, I'm like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Rob's like, I don't know.
But I'm saying, but that's definitely something you need to try, you know. Wow. Okay.
Or it's a new relationship, bro. Yeah. Like, I go with it. And if you really ain't into it, do the threesome.
Yeah.
And then peace out. Be like, all right. Gotcha. I'm going. Nah.
It's my birthday.
That's bad. That's bad advice. But the advice is shorty, like, she got to stop, I feel like, for her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if not, she got to be who she is. But she has to make the decision.
Yeah.
Yo, man, y'all lucked out. Y'all just got love advice from Force MD. Like,
mm-hmm. All the tender love you're giving to me. By Force MDs.
Real quick before, man. Thank you guys for that. What's next for you guys? Where can they catch you performing? I know there's a documentary in the world. Like, talk about it. What's the future of the group? What's next for the group, please?
We got a lot going on right now. We got a stage play called Legends of the Forgotten Barrel that's going to be hitting the city, different states soon. Matter of fact, our first date is Columbus weekend in Atlanta.
Wow.
10th at Morehouse College. You got a cast of like 15 people that's, you know, reenacting the story of the Foursome D's. Mm-hmm. That's one. We got a Foursome D's Academy. Yes. Where we got different people we work with in the industry that teach different things about the new business models of the industry and stuff like that. And we pretty much just give everybody as much information we could to, so they could build a blueprint for success in the music business. On top of that, we're doing a lot of shows and stuff like that. We got our 30th anniversary thing. We moving from city to city. Our next stop is California. We leaving Wednesday, go to California. With Bobby Brown, Fantasia, and different other people that's on the bill with us. But we moving around.
You better bring it, Bobby. Yeah. Yeah, might be like them old days.
Got a book.
Oh, Stevie got a book?
You got a book out called Necessary Force. It's a story of how we started. It's a really, definitely really interesting book that you definitely got to check
Where's
out.
Where's the book at? Can I get the book? Barnes & Noble's, Amazon? Where can I get the book at?
Get it online.
Let me know. Like,
yeah, because
I'm a little bookworm. I'm a nerd, so I'm definitely going to need that.
FoursomeDsWorld.com. We hope we got some more because it's been growing real fast. So we try to keep them coming.
He sold out the first bag. He sold like 2,500 already.
Wow. So.
But on top of that, we got a... what am I forgot to say? We're in the studio now. We've been in the studio recording. We got some nice music that we've been putting together, and it's coming along real good, you know. And we hoping that, you know, our base, our audience feels it, because I must admit we're really enjoying every bit of it. So we hope they enjoy it as much as we enjoyed it.
And Kyle, you mentioned the Relive?
No, I didn't mention that. You're good. Yeah, and I thought he was going to say. Ben, you thought he was going to say it too, right? You thought he was going to say it?
I just saw it.
We have a full documentary. We know people seen The Unsung, which is like 45 minutes and stuff like that. We have a full length documentary called Foursome D's Relive, and it's raw. Like, some of the questions you ask about different things and phases and challenges and the ups and the great times and all stuff in the group is all in that Foursome D's Relive. And I'm talking about, it's like an hour and a half long, and it's very informative, and I say it's very touching, because right now it's raw. It's not like a publicist was standing there and say, don't say it, say it's raw dog. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you getting it raw, everybody's mouth going right to the 1-2s, and we bringing you right there. And like I said, we making it educational, because we lose so many people in the industry to different things and stuff, like from the ego, the power, the drugs and stuff like that. You gotta have a story or something you can reference to say, okay, you know, I'm not gonna do this or do that, because a wise man learns from a fool's mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. And we have a serial coming out called Honey MDs.
No. Nah.
I'll play with you.
Wait. I'm on one, right? No, I can tell. Your poker face for a minute.
You're the sarcastic one, but I'm the gullible one. So my face dropped when he said cereal. I had to start drinking my water. I said,
Honey
MD.
Hey, listen,
watch out,
that.
Cheerios.
That's Stevie D. He's a Sagittarius. That was the other thing. Why did y'all put y'all signs on the back of albums? Like, this is
Oh, yeah. What are you? You're a.
Leo.
He's a Leo.
No Scorpios in the group?
Trisco.
Yeah, Trisco.
And he has the blonde hair.
Yeah.
Trisco.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the ladies like the ladies back there like the zodiac sign. Hey, what's up? My name is Steve. My zodiac sign is Sagittarius. Oh, mine's a Sagittarius. Oh, wow. That was connection back then with that, man. You know. Yeah,
we're going to put this up on the gram, too.
Yeah. Like,
but where can they catch you? Are you guys on Twitter or your Instagram?
Yeah, we on Twitter at Foursome D's, Instagram at Foursome D's. What am I missing?
And the website, one more time?
It's foursomedsworld.com.
foursomedsworld.com.
Or you can reach us through Panama, the Wopa Group, you know what I mean, at gmail.com.
Yes.
So, shout out to Panama.
Shout out to Panama for making
my
this
brother,
happen.
My brother.
Like, he hit me up and was like, yo, if you want to pour some D's on, I was like, what?
Now,
like,
did he say to you, that you a see question? Your king? Yo, did he see
you? Yeah,
King,
Peace King all the time.
Your king. Your king.
Yo, I feel so important every time
right?
He hits me up.
He's got such a way of like articulating his comments and his mentions and stuff. I know when it's a Panama tweet, like, you distinguish yourself too. You got your own little ways. I like it.
He's one of the best managers we had, role managers we had, man.
Listen, ever since I first met this guy, we met on set for a video, and the energy is just, it's been there forever. Yeah, shout out to Mills too.
Mick Mills?
No. Who? Oh. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, Mills. Oh, Mills Miller. Okay, Mills Miller. Yeah.
Listen.
No. Mills Miller, yeah.
I got a bill with me. Don't fuck that up. It's my guy. Meek is my guy.
Listen, we crack jokes all the time in here. So, that's what it is.
All right, man. So, Chris, where can they find you on Twitter and Instagram?
A Chris Lava, that's everywhere. Instagram, Kristen Quarrel on Facebook, Twitter, that's KrisLovaa, Chris Lava.
Panama, what's your Twitter?
Hop on the mic.
Yeah, you got it.
Twitter is It's Panama Baby, ITS Panama BABY. That's all across the board, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. That whole social media handheld.
Follow him, man. He's going to make you feel like the best version of yourself. I'm telling you.
And, I feel like every Sunday I just got to hit you from now on. Like, just me a little.
And I'm at Rob Markman on Twitter and on Instagram. And you catch me during the week on genius.com. Follow our podcast at RLS Podcast. And that's it. That's this week's episode, man. Check us out, man. Shout out to the Force MDs for coming through.
Yeah.
We're going to take you out with Jake and Papa. Peace.
And that's the motherfucking truth.